I don't like this business of preaching to fans.
Calm down, Greg. It's soccer. It's soccer.
You know anything else about soccer?
Not much. All I know is I got a lot of balls.
You know, it doesn't matter if you're in the stadium watching a game on TV. It's just the guy's not good enough. The guy is just not good enough.
Simon, I don't know if you're big into New Year's resolutions, but, you know, wondering if maybe you pledged to come out of your shell a little bit in 2015.
Kind of pisses me off, to be honest.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on SiriusXM FC Channel 94 and MLSsoccer.com. I am Andrew Wiebe. With me, one of the guys, David Goss, is here. Always glad to see him.
You're not a guy.
No. He's an analyst. He's an armchair analyst. Matt Doyle joining us here in the studios. We're thrilled. We're, you know what, like, you fill it well. You fill it well.
You guys are glowing just by my presence.
We Doyle, should've. Do you get goosebumps when you hear the music?
I do a little bit. You know, I mean, Extra Time Radio is the flagship. It is the rock that MLSsoccer.com's success is built upon.
Oh, all the inmates running it. We're all picking away at that rock with our...
Remember when it was Seguini and Furshaw?
Way back in the day. I was a big fan of that. I would listen at work. I listened to all the old episodes. I would go back and listen to it once I found it. And now here I am.
On top of the world.
In misery. In abject misery twice a week. No, I'm just kidding. We have a great show for you today. Two guests. We'll start it off with Garth Lagerwey. He's the president of soccer operations. I always get confused about that. And the GM of the Sounders. There's a few things to talk about the Sounders right now. Some guy named Clint, you know, a guy named Oba, maybe a Jordan Morris fella that we'll have some interesting queries about. Garth comes on, and hopefully he'll answer all those for us. We'll also talk to Emma Hayes. You know her well from this show the last couple of weeks. The U.S. are on to the quarterfinals in the Women's World Cup, and she will help us break that one down.
As well as Canada.
Big one for them, too. Thank you.
Just got to stay red sometimes. Hashtag Canada Red.
Look, but it was Wednesday night. Was insane. It was a great MLS Wednesday night. The only thing that could have made it better for me is if I had, like, six TVs in my house that I could have had it all going, because I was just, you know, I'm trying to decide which game to go to back and forth. I settled on Montreal-Toronto. It's the beginning of rivalry week, baby. That's what you got to go with. And they didn't disappoint.
No.
MJG, as I'm going to start calling them, Michael, Josie, and Jovinko.
That needs work.
It does need work. You know what does work well, though? Benoit Cheru is number 8, so 8 ball in MJG. I really need Benoit to, like, latch onto that, maybe release an album. We'll see. No? Nobody? Nobody liked that on Twitter either. I still like it.
Oh, good. I'm glad you tried it again.
A 3-1 win against the Impact. They dominated this one, really. It was as pretty as we've seen Toronto play, as effective, more importantly. What'd you see, Matt?
Well, I saw Michael Bradley doing Michael Bradley stuff. He got the goal on the delayed run into the box, which is how he scored 20 goals in the Eredivisie once upon a time. And then he had another 50-yard through ball assist. The team right now is built around Michael Bradley's ability to spread the field out and put Josie and Jovinko into positions where they can rip you up. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what they did to that Montreal back line.
Now, you know, the interesting quote after this one was Josie Altidore saying, hey, what did Mike do in this game? And he's like, it is what Michael does, which is run around like a robot the entire time. That's the underrated part. We knew about that. Now we're starting to see the skill in this one. But Jovinko still, he wows us every game. It's something new from this guy.
He's the best player in the league, right? Is everyone there or people still?
No, I mean, I think he's a lot of fun. He's a really, really great player. I think Bradley's the best player on the team. And I think Jovinko is probably a top 6 or 7 player in the league.
13 shots, though. Every time he gets the ball, I mean, you're on the edge of your seat. You know he's going to find the space to uncork one. He gets a PK in this one. Also had a very nice assist to Mr. Bradley.
I just think he's fun to watch. He also carried the team a little bit when Bradley's been in and out over the past few weeks. And so that shows me the level of leadership along with quality and entertainment. But it was a fun game. The atmosphere was really good. I think the Toronto fans are starting to get a little bit of what they deserve over the last 8 years now. It's been
forever. Over the last forever.
Yeah.
And you know how good this win was? Goalkeeper Chris Knappe went behind the goal and got a beer afterwards. Some fan had a beer. He goes and gets a drink. You know, I thought maybe on Twitter there'd be some fuddy-duddies that were like, oh, that's not good. Don't do that. if you can go drink a whole beer every time you win. Yeah. Do something fun.
And this
afterwards.
Is not a nothing win because, yeah. I mean, this Montreal team, mm-hmm. I think, is actually pretty good. And Toronto yeah. ripped them up.
Yeah, 5 of 7 of the last four wins. Not in this one. Toronto FC played DC at the weekend. We'll talk about the rivalry matches coming up this weekend in just a second. Let's stay on Wednesday night. First, though, a couple to run over. We'll talk about Seattle a little bit, leave most of that to Garth. Orlando, 2-0 winners against the Rapids, who, they've got like 2 wins in the last calendar year. It just, they still can't finish. You get Solanac, you get Doyle. It doesn't seem to matter for them. Kaká with a goal here. Kyle Larin with another goal. He cannot stop scoring. The Red Bulls also win on Wednesday night, 1-0 Real Salt Lake, and they did so without Sasha Kljestan. Dax McCarty said before the game that we need to toughen up a little bit. We need to grind a little more. Well, they ground in this one. It wasn't pretty, but they got the job done.
They did, and they got it done using a bunch of local guys. Mm-hmm. Matt Miazga, Connor Lade started in the back. Sean Davis got a run out in kind of a playmaker role. Mike Grella, the Long Island kid, getting on the end of the goal. So it's going to be interesting because I think we might end up seeing the Red Bulls become the metropolitan area's homegrown local team while NYCFC goes for the big stars.
Mm-hmm. And we're hearing more and more that Andrea Pirlo, that may happen here. You see him in New York. That can't be a coincidence.
I think there needs to be an Extra Time Radio wine tasting event with Andrea Pirlo somewhere on the Long Island wine trail.
If you're from New York City and you met Pirlo while he's in the city, somehow you found him on the subway, we want to interview you. Hit us up. We'll do it. At Extra Time Radio.
It feels like everyone has seen him.
I know. Like Instagram here, Instagram that. And he's like dressed like kind of like a like my dad kind of baggy pants.
That's because he's trying to pretend like he's not Pirlo. Because you know if he was dressed like himself, it would have been so smooth.
People would have figured that one out. Columbus 2-1 winners against New England. New England continue to slide. This team, it's hard to figure them out. They're, you know, they're inconsistent, but what side of the coin it'll be, you don't know. Kai Kamara, though, 2 goals. He's up to 12. He now has set his career high, and the Crew still have 18 games left in this
season.
And
it doesn't seem very hard for him. He does a lot of good work.
He missed multiple.
Yeah, because he's doing so much good work off the ball, on top of the scoring, setting up his teammates, and he has 4 or 5 teammates who just want to create for him.
Yeah.
And so that means, okay, similar to what we see with Zardes, you don't have to be efficient if you're getting 10 chances a game. The second goal he scored, though, he takes like a half step to get away from the defender to give himself an angle mm-hmm. to finish off of Finley. Because he is a finisher, he does understand
most of
that
his goals
role.
Are tap-ins.
And so exactly, far, yeah. Because he's reading everything that's going on, he understands what's going on, and he's keeping his poise enough to get them the goals, and he could be on a record pace this season because of the opportunities, if he stays healthy, that he's going to get. I don't know how much he's going to go play national team as well, so he may have the opportunity to score a ton of goals.
Yep, took a couple months off with the Crew last offseason. Looks like a really smart decision from Kai. He's leading that Golden Boot race right now, but kind of, okay, it's not the eye-opening result, but LA just keeps smacking people. That's 10 goals in their last 2 MLS games, 16 in their last 3 games. Of course, PSA Elite was an amateur team, but the Timbers, they got run over here. And Bruce Arena said, look, it wasn't a 5-0 game, but that almost, to me, feels like a little bit of lip service. Yeah, the Timbers came out strong, but ultimately the clash shone through.
Yeah, I don't think the Timbers were ever actually really in this one, and you give them a little bit of a mulligan because they've been on a good run, especially defensively.
Yeah, but 4 straight wins. That was the best they've ever done.
And they like expended a lot of energy last week in the Open Cup game, and then protecting their house when Houston came calling. And so, that said, I don't Timbers at 100% weren't going to play in that game with LA mm-hmm. last night. The Galaxy, when they can get Rodgers forward on the overlap, and now with Legette moving into these really clever spots and having the ruthlessness in front mm-hmm. of the net, adding a different dimension. It's fun to watch LA right now, unless you happen to be a fan of the team playing.
It's also fun because
didn't even mention Robbie Keane there.
No, but every time Legette does something well,
yeah,
you
see
just
how we pause?
Feel
yeah.
every single broadcaster just squirm
because yeah.
they don't know what to say, and they have to say
well,
his name.
A couple of them listen to this
again.
Show. I heard him out on Twitter, like, yeah. okay, how do you say it? How do you say it?
We still
and they're like,
know
yeah, he tried to explain it to us, but it was still two-sided.
You got it wrong 7 minutes after he said it
yeah,
on the show.
It's not easy, man. Yeah. I think it's Legette. I think it's
that's
like,
what I think, too.
Okay, well,
I think
we, that's what we think.
But I just want to make a point. He, Zardes, Villarreal, Majanto, Bradford Jameson, These are all
Sorto,
guys.
Sorto. These going are all down McBean.
Guys who Mendiola. Are Mendiola, yeah. who's leading USL in assists. These are all under 25 years old. Mm-hmm. Galaxy are going to be good for – by the way, Juninho's 26. So these are all guys who are going to be good for a long,
Juninho
long time.
Juninho gets a goal on this one.
And we've said before, you know, there are becoming teams that go out and buy big stars and teams that try and create differently their rosters. And LA's had – done a good job of doing both.
Yeah.
They draft Omar Gonzalez, but they also go out and get Steven Gerrard and Robbie Keane. And that's what's made them the best club in this league for 6 years.
It's the best of both worlds. You have those young guys. You know how they have talent. And Robbie Keane said it after this game. He says, I've been talking to Sebastian. I've been telling him, hey, get the ball off your foot. You're good with the ball, but we'll be better if you move it. You have Robbie Keane and Steven Gerrard blooding your next generation of players. Like, it doesn't get much better than that for LA. Of course, LA, Seattle last year, that was a supporters' shield race. Right now, it looks like LA is on the upward trajectory. Seattle may be on a little bit of a downward one. They won't have Clint Dempsey or Obafemi Martins for a while. They have now failed to score in two straight games. I'm sure they're not that worried, though. Garth Lagerwey here on the line with us after a 1-0 win for the Philadelphia Union in Philly. He is the GM and president of soccer operations there with the Sounders. Garth, how's it going?
Going all right.
Good. Glad to have you here. Now, let's start right now with your schedule. Go through that planner with me. The window is coming up, the summer window here in MLS. I got to imagine you're a busy guy.
I'll tease a little something here. We actually have a player signing that we think we're pretty close to. We may be able to announce as soon as next week. So, obviously, that person wouldn't be eligible until July 8th when the window opens. But we have been working on something, so we'll see if we can bring it to fruition in the short term. Beyond that, we would still have a roster spot open and international spots available, so we would be able to sign, you know, easily sign one more player. Potentially, you know, we'd have to do some other things if we want to add more than that. But it's definitely on our radar to continue to try to improve our team. And you know, we played a lot of games in a short period of time here and have Portland on Sunday and D.C. then on the next Friday. So they keep coming fast and furious for us through July 3rd, and then we get a little bit of a break and play once a week for the rest of July. And then in August, we have Champions League, and it starts hitting again twice a week pretty frequently. So we're going to need everybody in our squad, and you know, I've been pretty pleased in general with how our young players have performed so far.
Now, I got to dig in a little more there. Is there any other hint you can give us, even just a general area of the field? And then you've got three DPs, so obviously that's not where we're looking unless my math is off here. Where's your wiggle room? How do you approach something like that when you maybe don't have that big slot open? I know Seattle's known for those big-name players.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a player that our fans will know, put it that way. But it is not a DP. And that's not the market that we're in right now. We you know, are very happy with Clint Nova and Ozzie, and we think that they've, when they've been healthy, they've all performed at an extremely high level. So, you know, a guy who's going to help us on the field, not in goal, we think Stefan Fry's played pretty well too. So, you know, that's about as much as I can give you. And like you said, we still got some T's to cross and some I's to dot, but hopefully we can get that done by next week.
Now, are you doing this for S2 as well? Do you go out on scouting missions to try to find guys to sign for the reserve team that's playing its first year now in USL?
S2's been great for us for a number of reasons. Certainly, number one, to get the young players' experience. And I think part of the reason some of our young guys have done well in the situations for the first team is because they've been better prepared. They've been in environments that were meaningful with a lot of stress, a lot of pressure, and some adversity. That they've had to fight through to be ready to play for the Sounders. So concurrent with that is you absolutely do have a scouting process for us too. I would say generally we have a scouting process for the organization. And some guys come in on trial and some guys are identified and we have to figure out where they fit best. So, you know, for example, when we signed Thomas to the first team, we signed Sergio to the second team, but, you know, both those guys ran on trial together, and that's how we felt was the best fit for us. You know, another one I can tease for you guys is that I think we're going to shortly announce a signing of a draft pick that we have. So, and that'll likely be an S2 signing. And again, that's not done yet, but hopefully it will be soon.
Now, a couple guys training with S2 this week, according to reports. Clint Dempsey and Jordan Morris. Our listeners will certainly know those two names. But no Dempsey for obvious reasons for the MLS squad against Philly this week. Same for Oba. He's out with injury. We know that this team with those two guys is one of, if not the best team in MLS. You guys have proved that with the two. But what is it without them, Garth? Because there's going to be some time with the Gold Cup as well as Oba's recovery in which they're not there. What does this team become without them?
I think it becomes a team that has opportunities for young players and for guys to step forward and get experience. And I think that's what we're seeing. And when you play young players, you're going to have some ups and downs, and you got to be willing to ride those. And I think the important message is to remember that MLS Cup is not won in July. The biggest thing that we have to do as an organization is get healthy, get everybody back. And the reality is that that's probably not going to happen until after the Gold Cup. So it's going to be a little bit of a bumpy ride, perhaps, in the short term. But that said, we've gotten great efforts from our guys. We're going to continue to do that. We're going to continue to fight and battle and try to win every game. And, you know, are we as good at forward without Clint Nova? I think it's silly to pretend that we are. That means that we have to contribute and we have to get goals other ways. And I think in some respects, those guys up top are so good that sometimes we over-rely on it. And again, I think this is actually a really good exercise for our team to figure out over the next 5 or 6 weeks, how do we score collectively? You know, you're not going to replace those guys one for one. And it's not a reasonable expectation to put on Lamar Nagel or Chad Barrett or anybody else playing up there to say, hey, come in and be as good as Clint Dempsey or Lefemi Martin. So that's not the right approach. And those guys, Nagel and Barrett, are good players, and they have a lot of ability. And we just have to do more to support them and put them in better positions to succeed. And, again, we got to get scoring from our entire team. And, again, we could come out of this. If we take a positive approach, we could be a lot better team by the time we get Clint Nova back. And that's the way we're going to look at it.
Now, Garth, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about Dempsey and the suspension. It's what everybody's been talking about for the last week or so. First of all, your thoughts on how fair it was. I think on this show we kind of came to the conclusion that it was about right. And then I'm even more interested in the behind the scenes as it happens within a big club like this. What happened in the aftermath? What was the behind the scenes reaction from you guys? And we haven't really heard from Clint. I'm curious, did he apologize to his teammates? Did he apologize to the organization? What went down here?
Yeah, the judicial process is still ongoing. So, you know, it's tough to, you know, react one way or the other. I mean, we know what MLS has done, and we've accepted that sanction. And, you know, we're going to move forward. I think, you know, we addressed this as an organization last week and said that it's not just Clint. Everybody on our side has to do a little bit better job, be a little bit calmer in some of these situations. And so, you know, we're going to stand by that. And we've, you know, we followed up through all aspects of S2 and our academy as well. To try to stress the fact that we're gonna carry ourselves a little bit better as an organization and as individuals that are part of the Sounders. And if we do that, we think we can minimize the risk of disciplinary actions in the future. And so, you know, as to the sanction, you know, again, until we know the whole piece, I understand that U.S. Soccer may have a separate sanction that is coming down the pipe. And you know, once we know what that is, then you know, we obviously can react to that. But I think in general, that's where things stand right now.
Do you think that superstars get treated or handled with kid gloves by MLS in terms of the disciplinary committee and in terms of how the refs officiate him? And I'm not talking about just about Clint Dempsey. I'm talking about Robbie Keane spiking a ball last night and running up and getting into a ref's face and no card. I'm talking about Jermaine Jones with an ankle-breaking tackle nearly on Dax McCarty in last year's playoffs and no suspension. I'm talking all the way back to David Beckham almost ending Tony Chani's career, and he didn't even see a yellow card for that tackle. To me, I think the stars get treated differently, and I think it's one of the tough aspects of covering this league.
I say a couple things. One is, you know, I think Dempsey's punishment was pretty severe. I think it's the longest suspension ever for an Open Cup infraction. So, you know, I think you know, I think as a superstar, I think he was, you know, he certainly wasn't handled with kid gloves. In this case, you know, as to the rest of the stuff, I don't want to get in trouble by talking about guys on other teams or about other incidents. You know, what I would say in general is, we obviously want to play fairly, and we want everybody to have a chance to succeed. And, you know, look, I grew up in Chicago watching Michael Jordan, and, you know, Jordan got a couple of calls here and there along the way because of who he was. And I think that that's, you know, kind of the world we live in a little bit, right? I mean, it's a celebrity culture, and, you know, I think you certainly have to have rules for everybody. But, you know, the idea that everyone is treated exactly the same, that's probably not the case.
So, you know, I think you still have to stay true to your values. Certainly still have to protect referees and you still have to protect other players. But I think within those confines, I do think that some of the bigger names are going to get a little bit more weaker.
Now, Garth, one of the things we heard in the aftermath of all this is that the Sounders as an organization had voiced a little bit of apprehension about the assignment of Daniel Radford to this game. He hadn't done an MLS game in the center. He'd done some NASL and some U.S. Open Cup, but just 10 or so into this game. How do we prevent this from happening? Because there's a lot of different things going on here, not just what happened with Clint, but in the game as a whole and how the referees affect it. Your thoughts on that process of the assignment of the referee and then also just refereeing in general in MLS. It seems like in the aftermath of this, a lot of people are quick to say, well, the refereeing is terrible. I'd be interested to know what your thoughts generally on the level of reffing is as well.
Sure. Look, the fact that we all have to keep in mind in any discussion of refereeing is that we have more than doubled the size of the league in the decade. 2004, we had 10 teams. We now have 20, 11 years later. And the size of the referee pool did not double in that same time frame, and it's not reasonable to expect it to. And a couple of years ago, the league started pro, and I have great respect for Peter Walton, the gentleman who runs that. And I think the referees are getting better. And I think that they're increasing the number of good referees. I think, you know, when fans react to individual calls or individual games, you know, they don't necessarily look at or even care about the big picture in terms of how does the referee's performance over the course of the season, you know, and you have of necessity because we're trying to grow the pool. We have some young referees breaking in, and some of them are going to succeed and some won't. It's just the same as is the case with young players. And so I think, again, it's totally natural when something bad happens to your team to say, we could have been refereed differently. But I think the important takeaway as an organization is to say, well, what can we do to improve our performance such that the game is not in the referee's hands? And, you know, we strive to do that and do that the best you can. And again, you'll get some good referees. You'll get some referees that maybe have an off night. And, you know, I think treating them with respect and treating them as human beings is a good thing and most likely to elicit, fair and unbiased responses from them. So I just think refereeing is a pretty tough job. And I look at the other sports leagues and, the NBA playoffs, there weren't exactly positive raves coming out about the referees roughing the NBA finals. So, you know, in that context, I just think it's a natural thing. They're going to be lightning rods and it's part of the sport.
Everybody has an opinion. Everybody has an opinion about Jordan Morris as well, and a lot of Sounders fans hopeful, praying probably, that he ends up with his hometown club. As I said, he was training with S2, it seemed, and you guys have been pretty straightforward on this. Can you give us any update? Is there a feeling about what might happen? And also, what are your reactions to a college kid playing for the U.S. men's national team? That seems kind of strange for me, at least, at this point in the development of the game in the country.
Yeah, and you know, we can talk about all these macro issues, and it's a totally fair question. And at the end of the day, it comes down to what Jordan wants to do. He's a smart young man. He's been very successful on and off the field. And he's really enjoyed his college experience at Stanford. And, I really enjoyed going to college at Duke. So I can understand really wanting to go to Stanford. And, you know, that's part of who he is, and that's the choice he's made. And honestly, the other stuff is kind of irrelevant. I hope that Jordan signs with the Sounders at some point. We have a good relationship with the family, and you know, we're certainly hopeful that he will choose to do that. But ultimately, it's up to Jordan. And every individual has the right to make their own choice, and we're going to respect that choice. And, you know, our door's open. And, you know, we'd love to sign Jordan at any point. But, you know, folks want to know, is there an update? Is there a process? And the answer on this one's been the same. Literally, I met Dr. Morris my second day on the job at Sounders, and he told me that Jordan was going to go to Stanford. And that they have never wavered from that. That's never changed. So there isn't really an update. We talked all the time. Dr. Morris works for us. So, the conversations are ongoing, but I don't expect any change in Jordan's status. And as to, you know, what's normal or what's unusual or whatever, it's all up to Jordan. It's his choice. And hopefully we can persuade him that the Sounders is a great way to start his career, and hopefully that, you know, maybe that comes as soon as next year.
Garth, you've talked about long-range goals in terms of building the player personnel inside the Sounders system, whether it be S2 or the academy, and of course up to the first team. What about the actual structure of where the team plays? Right now, I think everybody knows you guys got great crowds, 40-plus thousand on a regular basis. So there's no real hurry to leave CenturyLink Field, but there have to be some sort of internal conversations about maybe someday building a home of your own.
Yeah, we just signed, and I'm probably going to screw up the details here because this all happened mostly before I got here, but we signed a long-term lease with CenturyLink Field. I think it's through maybe 2030 or something like that, but it's a long time. And so I think that, you know, this issue of building our own stadium, it's been settled. It's been resolved, and we're really grateful to be in CenturyLink. It's in downtown Seattle. It's really accessible, to our fans. We have a whole culture that's grown up around that site, with the March to the Match and all the things that our fans do in and around the game. And, you know, I think it'd be pretty risky to try to change some of that. And I know folks, get up in arms and say they don't like the field surface, for example, but that's really, for me, it's not the only negative part of, of playing the CenturyLink. I think it's an awesome place to play. Crowds are awesome. It's a tough place to come into as an opponent, I can speak to from experience. And as part of our lease agreement, they're going to replace that field turf regularly. So I think we made that as good as we could make it as well. So, in this case, it is what it is, and I think it's the best environment for soccer in the United States, and, we're hoping we can continue to grow and keep that going.
Decades more of Cascadia Derbies coming there. You've got one this weekend, though. It's in Portland. You've had one already this season. You were kind of on the outside looking in when you're at RSL. Now you're on the inside. You see this rivalry from the inside, as I said here. What is one thing that you've learned since you've got there that you didn't know before, or something that you were like, wow, that's actually pretty incredible, the depth that this goes in these communities?
You hear stories, about things that the mascots have done and all that stuff, but a lot of it's apocryphal and happened. What you get a sense for, that I didn't have coming in is the history, going back to the 70s with the Timbers and the Sounders, when they weren't necessarily playing in MLS and all the craziness that's kind of going on back and forth. So, and when you hear those stories, again, you get a better appreciation for the rivalry. You talk to the fans and you can see how important it is to them, and it's cool. It's fun. I grew up in Chicago. It's one of the better rivalries of the Packers and the Bears. And, you see the passion of the fans around that, and you certainly see that passion here with Portland and with Seattle. And it makes the games really fun to play. You don't have to worry about firing your players up at all. It happens naturally, and your guys are going to be focused going into that game, and it's going to be a difficult game. And you throw in an open cup match here or there, and you wind up playing these guys, five, six times a year, and I think we have Vancouver in Champions League. If we met them in the playoffs, too, we could wind up playing them seven times. So it's a lot of derbies. It's a lot of games. But they're fun games to play, and we're looking forward to this weekend.
There you go. 7 p.m. Eastern, Fox Sports 1, TSN 2. For those of you who want to watch this one, a big match in Portland. Portland, Seattle. We know all about the Cascadia Derby. It's going to be a big one for both sides. Garth Lagerwey, working hard to get some deals done. Garth, thanks for your time, man. We'll let you get back to work.
Sounds good, guys. Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much, Garth. Big thanks to Garth Lagerwey for joining us. Anything to take away, guys? Quick thoughts before we get to the second segment?
I mean, I just like the long-term thinking that we're seeing from a lot of teams. Mm-hmm. And one of them that we haven't even mentioned yet, the guys who are leading the Supporter Shield race right now, DC United, we know they have big plans with their academy, of course, but with the stadium coming up. It's funny because they feel like a sleeping giant, and they're still leading the Supporter Shield race.
And they're tied for they're second in history with MLS Cups.
Right. Speaking of sleeping, though, this game on Wednesday with the Fire, I think you could have slept through most of it and been okay. The one moment was Connor Doyle with a lightning bolt, like a laser beam, sniper shot. It was an incredible goal. Go watch it on MLSsoccer.com.
It reminded me of Jimmy Traore's goal for the Sounders, I think, 3 or 4 years ago. It's like you get to hit a ball that perfectly once or twice in your life. And the fact that it happened to be a game winner against a conference rival had to be pretty great for Connor.
No net there, no stands. That thing's rising as it exits the parking lot. Yeah. There's no end to that one. Let us know what you think about the Wednesday games at Extra Time Radio, Extra Time at MLSsoccer.com. When we come back, we will talk all things MLS weekend, the U.S. National Team Gold Cup roster, and Women's World Cup.
Fans, we want to hear hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Kekuta mani la tuda mani dama play Vancouver Whitecaps and mangzi extra time like ini diwaha journalisti.
You can't give it up for a group of women who are representing the U.S. against the world, yet I bet you're the same guy who sits inside on a nice day and watches the NFL draft. The NFL draft, a full day to find out if your favorite college player is going to have to go mansion shopping in Jacksonville or Tampa Bay. I mean, really.
Really? And let me ask you.
Back now on Extra Time Radio with the guys, David Goss. The armchair analyst, Matt Doyle, filling in for Simon Borg. That was a little
Seth
clip.
Seth Meyer, Amy Poehler are in studio. We would like to officially say they are in studio for the first time ever in Extra Time
Get
Radio.
In, of course, that was in reference to, I can't even remember his name. I'm not even going to grace it with his name. A Sports Illustrated writer who who pretty much said that it's not worth watching any women's sports, including the World Cup. Needless to say, Extra Time Radio disagrees. Emma Hayes, Chelsea ladies head coach, will be on in just a bit. She's going to help us preview the U.S. and Canada games this weekend. Quarterfinals, baby. World Cup, it rolls on. That's what's that, the biggest one in the world? Yeah, it's a decent tournament, Mr. SI guy. Either way, I forgot his name. It's okay. It doesn't matter. Let's move on to the games this weekend. Rivalry Week kicks on. We'll talk about the U.S. Gold Cup roster in just a second. Let's see. The first one is Saturday. San Jose, LA Galaxy, MLS Live, 10:30 p.m.
No, the first one is Friday night.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Texas, El Capitan.
El Capitan is at stake. Somebody's going to fire off a few cannons. FC Dallas and Houston, 9 p.m. Eastern, Unimas.
Now,
thank
I believe
you.
We're contractually obligated to not talk about Houston right now. So.
Really? Is that the case?
But someone tweeted at us.
Dynamo fans believe that. In the spirit of that, let's talk about FC Dallas. No, I'm just kidding. But they do say there, Oscar Pereja says, he tells all his academy kids, this is the game you have to win, and right. They built through the academy. That could be their base for years to come.
Yeah, well, I mean, we talked about it a little bit with LA's young core. I mean, look at what FC Dallas have done via the draft and via the academy. You got guys like Victor Ulloa, Kellen Acosta, Moises Hernandez. Of course, they got Matt Hedges through the draft a few years back. All the pieces look like they're there. But something is not working right now for FC Dallas, and I haven't been able to put my finger on what exactly it is.
Yeah, there's a couple bits of news from them today, some guys signing new contracts. Tesho Akindele, Mauro Diaz, and Moises Hernandez. You mentioned it. Tesho, also a draft pick. Pereja shows he knows what's up in there. They'll be there for a while. On Houston's side, I still haven't been able to figure this team out. For a while, they were like, oh, yeah, they're playing good soccer. The defense is coming around, and now it's up and down once again.
Yeah, I mean, they dropped a couple, I think, tough games in those few games. I think they're a team that is still waiting for Kubo. I understand Will Bruin scoring, but I don't think you can rely on him as much as you will be when you have Kubo. And they lost Barnes because of Copa America, and he's the engine for all of it. He was playing, you thought he was
he had
playing
stretches.
As good as anyone
in
the league.
Yeah, he had stretches where he was as exciting as anyone
in
the league.
And
he
is at an age where that might not be a flash in the pan. That might be development. And that might be who he is.
Well, he's finally healthy again, and he's getting minutes at his preferred position.
And fit. That was a big
thing. Yeah, because he had a little pudge when he first came to MLS. But they don't get any creativity from their central midfield, which is, I think, their biggest problem. They play Garrido, who I love, as kind of a six, and they have Ricardo Clark going box to box, and Ricardo Clark can do some things, but he's not Michael Bradley. You know, he's not Pedro Morales. He's not the type of guy who's going to open up the field and get guys on the overlap to get in there and pull teams apart.
And so then it falls on the wings, and Brad Davis and Boniek, and Brad Davis has not been the Brad Davis of old.
And I think that's the problem.
Yeah, and Boniek hasn't been the Boniek of old.
I think the production can be there from them, and I think if you bring in a guy like Kubo who scored as many goals as he did for Chivas and bring him in, he's going to be efficient. And so if you can only create two or three good chances, he's going to get you a goal in a game.
Competition always good up top. Now let's go to San Jose, LA Galaxy, the California Clasico. These always are entertaining. Alan Gordon on the other side now, back to LA.
2 and 3 days on this one?
Yeah.
2 and 4 days? They play U.S. Open Cup in the middle of the week as well.
Yeah, man, we're getting a lot of these rivalry matches going through. Stanford Stadium is the site of this one. It normally is 10:30 p.m. MLS Live. But Wando Keane, is this more roadkill for the Galaxy, even on the road, or does San Jose stand a chance here?
I think they stand a chance. They'll be better organized defensively than what we saw from Portland the other night, who I, again, they had been on a good run of defensive form, but they were very poor. Look, it's a Dom Kinnear team. Dom knows how to make sure that everything is lined up. He's got veteran central defenders in Goodson and Bernardes. They're not going to make it easy, but LA have so many variables in attack. It's really hard to account for all of them when they're playing like this.
How do you stop MPG if you're Bruce? Do you just sick Juninho on him and say?
I just think you starve him of the ball. If you have the ball, I think that's what they'll do. And you just hope he doesn't kill you on the counter, because that's where San Jose is going to get an attack in this game, is on the counter attack. They have the pace to do it. That's really – they're going to have to sit back, defend with numbers, and counter, and I think that's really what they're going to focus
on. Yeah, and it'll be particularly up their own right side. When Robbie Rogers pushes forward for the Galaxy, they'll try to get into that space in behind the gap and pull the entire Galaxy defense to one side.
Or just slap the microphone away.
Yeah, slap it away. Four fewer games played for San Jose, yet just one fewer win. So they're having a nice little season under the radar here out there for Dom Kinnear. Let's go to Sunday. That's where the big matches are here. I say big matches, and that's immediately those Houston fans saying, we knew it. We knew it. East Coast bias. New York City FC, New York Red Bull
classic
starts
Wichita
us off.
Classic Wichita people.
That's right. Classic Wichita. Those Midwesterners. They
with
don't know
what's
their
East Coast bias.
Yeah. 5 p.m. On ESPN. That's an upgrade. It was ESPN2, so now it's on the big network. This is yet another chance for history to be made. I mean, I don't think there's any other way to put it. This is the building of what could be a great rivalry in MLS and just what could be a great game.
It's going to be 45K in the stadium. It's going to be loud.
Are you going to be there? I'm
going to
be there.
I am going to be there. And I just think it's the opposite of last game. New York City on a great run. Red Bulls on a poor run. Confidence low. I think, though, the juice of this game gives the Red Bulls an opportunity to get back where they feel like they are. They've felt like their performances have been strong and that the result hasn't been there, and I think this game gives them the opportunity on a big stage to show that they really are potentially a top team in the East.
Yeah, I think that it's a lot of sort of the undercurrent, and just one of the granular aspects to look at is New York's record, especially defensively, when Matt Miazga plays. They have been a much better team this year when he's available, and he's back from the U-20 World Cup now, and he's back in the starting lineup. They look better when he's out there, and the numbers back that up. So I think even though you could say NYCFC on a really good run, Red Bulls not so much, the Red Bulls are whole again, and that's what really, I think, matters.
Although Lloyd Sam is a question mark, which is a big question mark.
Yeah, it could be a big question mark for them. Having trouble creating chances right now, feeding Bradley Wright Phillips. Portland, Seattle finishes it all off. We talked about it before, 7 p.m. Eastern. Fox Sports 1, TSN 2. No Clint Dempsey in this one, although Grant Wall is now reporting that we have a little bit of news on that U.S. Open Cup front. Remember, MLS made a decision, then the U.S. Open Cup was going to make their own decision. He is reporting it's a 2-year suspension or 6 games, whichever is greater. That depends on whether they make a run in the Open Cup over those 2 years. He also saying referee abuse assault doesn't apply in this one. So interesting news from Grant there. Let's turn to the U.S. national team, as well as Canada, as well as the rest of CONCACAF. Really, the Gold Cup 23-man rosters came out. The U.S. is not a ton of surprises here. Clint Dempsey is there, of course. Jurgen Klinsmann saying, hey, we'll have a talk in Nashville, and then it'll be all good, as Klinsmann likes to say. No Matt Beisler in this one. No Breck Shea, although it looks like that was a groin issue for them. Any surprises here, Matt, or is this kind of standard operating procedure? It is a lot of veterans. There's no Jordan Morrises or anything like that.
Yeah, the average age of the group is right in line with the 2013 group that won and the 2011 and 2009 Mexican teams that won. So it's not an older group. That said, we do have Brad Davis making a return, which
was surprising, I think.
Caught a lot of people by surprise. Chris Wondolowski is there, and Wando's in good goal-scoring form, he's a reliable veteran. But I think if you have Dempsey, Wando, and Aaron Johansson as your forward group, there's no backup for Jozy Altidore if Jozy Altidore gets hurt. So it's kind of a reprise of what happened last year at the World Cup. Let's just hope he lasts longer than 20 minutes this time.
Pray for the hamstrings, folks.
Yeah, pretty much.
I think, for me, the most exciting part about this tournament is going to be the back line. I think John Brooks has played as well as I've ever seen him play over the last few games with the U.S., and I think Omar is having a great season in MLS. So them together, and we've discussed a little bit, but if Fabian Johnson can be allowed to play in midfield, and Yedlin can prove that he's a full-time starting right back. That's the future for this U.S.
Johnson listed as a defender, Yedlin listed as a midfielder. I think that's the way they want to go.
And then, of course, Timmy Chandler gets called in again. Why? Because my mental health isn't important to Jurgen Klinsmann.
Do we need to arrange for something for you here?
Potentially, at least someone to talk to.
The benefits package is a little bit tough. We're having a tough time keeping you here. Canada's roster came out as well. Noah Atiba Hutchison for them. Lots of MLSers there. You can check all of this out. MLSsoccer.com/goldclub/2015. Let's turn to the women. Quarterfinals, as I said, the U.S. taking on China, 7:30 Eastern on Friday. Fox, NBC, Universo on the other side Saturday. England, Canada. You can watch all those. Check all the coverage at MLSsoccer.com. We have Emma Hayes here to tell us all about it. Emma, how's it going?
Oh, it's going well, thank you. Happy to be on.
I hear you had a little bit of trouble this afternoon. You're navigating the wiles of Long Island.
Well, you know, if I got myself on the right train, then we wouldn't be so delayed in having this conversation. But I was being, a bit of a village idiot, and I took the wrong train. But I'm here now, so I'm happy.
Easy mistake. I did plenty the same when I first moved to this city. Let's jump into the action here. The U.S. Friday night against China. You mentioned it. You like the way China's playing in this tournament. They got a great counterattack. The U.S. missing some players: Lauren Holliday, Megan Rapinoe, some of the offensive fulcrums there. What's your take on the game? Most people expect the U.S. to advance. Pretty much everyone, to be honest.
Well, I think it will be a closer game than people think, but I do think the changes for the U.S., you know, could be the catalyst that they're looking for. You know, too often in games, their attack just hasn't quite worked the way that they wanted to, and on some level it's because their play has been quite predictable, often balls just going from back to front. So I think with Kristen Press coming into the team, they have a really good 1v1 player that goes to take on the fullback, and I think that's the weakness in the China team. But more importantly, with Morgan Brian coming in, I think it finally frees up Carly Lloyd to get forward and get into the box, because so far in this tournament, Carly looks so preoccupied with having to do her defensive work, which is equally important. But I think that the U.S. really lose something massive without her being in the final third as often as we're used to seeing.
Now, of course, the lightning rod continues to be Abby Wambach. A lot of people were a little bit upset about her comments about the referee. On your side, do you stick with, if you're Jill Ellis, the Alex Morgan-Abby Wambach combo?
I think, you know, it's been Jill's decision to stick by those two, and I think she will see that out. As I've said all along, we still have to remember what the rest of the world are afraid of. And the last thing that China want to face, especially if balls are going into the box from Press in particular, is dealing with Abby Wambach. I don't expect a big US win. You know, contrary to what people think, this China team is as good as they have been for at least 7 or 8 years. So they are facing a formidable opponent. However, China don't score goals, and that's their biggest downside. So I think this will be a close one, probably a U.S. win by about a one-goal margin, but that's it.
Now, Emma, we have to say, full disclosure, if no one noticed, you are English, and the other half of our fan group is Canadian. They're hoping that their team's going to be going to the semifinals. What do you think about that matchup between Canada and your home team?
Well, I think there's a couple of key points in that. The first is the crowd. You know, if the Canadians can get behind the home team, especially in the opening periods of the game, then I think that England could really struggle with that. So at times, the English back five defending has looked a little disjointed. And any balls into the box which create indecision, I think if Canada can capitalise and Sinclair finally finds the back of the net in open play, then it could be a home win. However, England have proved so far to be a difficult team to beat, and what they have in abundance is strength in depth. You know, three games in a row, substitutes have come off the bench and won the game for England, and I don't think it will be any different in this matchup. So for England, they cannot concede early on. It's so important to quieten the crowd, and then in the second half, I think with the substitute changes, England will go on and win this game. Again, by a close margin, because Erin McLeod in goal for Canada has been, in my opinion, the best goalkeeper in the tournament so far.
Incredible stuff. Pins and needles for you during that one, I'm sure. You'll hopefully be happy afterwards. Hopefully the Canada fans are up too. I'm just going to sit on the fence right here and, and go right down the middle. The other game, as far as aesthetics go, it's Germany-France. And really, these two teams, for a lot of people, playing the best soccer in the tournament. I have to imagine this is a special one for you as well, just being so involved in the women's game.
I think it's the game that everybody expected to be the final. If in Europe in particular, France have beaten Germany earlier on this year, but Germany have the beating of the French team. You know, they've proved the past 4 or 5 years that when it comes down to it, Germany produce under pressure, and I don't expect anything different. This German team is a total, complete team. From back to front, their attacking play is impressive, but more impressive is their defensive pressing. And I think if the French team manage to get a goal on this German team and go on and win this game, I think France will psychologically be in a position to win the World Cup, which it has, until this point, been their biggest downfall. So there's a lot at stake for the French team. For the Germans, I think it's just business for them. They will dismiss the French team and look forward to facing USA in the semifinals.
That one will be fascinating for everybody involved. Emma Hayes, we're always happy to have her. She gives us great insight. Great insight on the Women's World Cup, a big weekend with that. The quarterfinals coming up. Emma, thank you so much. Have fun in Long Island. Take the right train next time. I know you probably learned a few lessons just like I do.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thanks so much. Big thanks to Emma Hayes there. We've enjoyed her commentary throughout this entire tournament. It'll keep coming. The final, of course, a little ways away now. The U.S.
I'm
trying
excited.
To get there. Canada trying to get
it's
there.
It's going to be a good weekend. I'm drooling
it
over
will,
these
it
games.
It will. Interesting thoughts on Germany-France, though. That's the one you want to watch, I think, if you're into aesthetics. Of course, Patriots are going to go with U.S. and Canada as well. On to the mailbag, though. We have some MLS Live accounts to give away. Let's do it.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hi, this is Owen Coyle of the Houston Dynamo, and you're listening to Extra Time Radio.
Back now on Extra Time Radio with the guys, David Goss, Matt Doyle, the armchair analyst. This sounds like the beginning of like a 70s TV show.
I like it.
Yeah.
This is my jam.
Oh, yeah. Where's like the catchphrase and the laugh track? Then we'll drop us right into the mailbag here. Some things we didn't mention, but we got mail on. Robbie Rogers scores his first goal for the Galaxy on Pride Night. Landon Donovan tweeting out after this one that it's like a storybook, Hollywood ending. Great goal from him. Great pass from Robbie Keane. We didn't talk about this in the other one, but he actually like shook Alvis Powell out of his shoes and made him fall down. Great job for him. A great story there for Robbie Keane. Always like to see that. Also, Atlanta, MLS Atlanta, whatever you want to call it, has basically announced their name. Brian Strauss broke the news, and then they pretty much confirmed it on Twitter with a tongue-in-cheek tweet. What is it? Atlanta United FC?
Yeah.
And that got the Twitterverse, as you can expect, groaning. They did not like that one. What are your guys' quick thoughts?
I think it's just so vanilla, which is, I mean, I guess good in a way. Cause
a lot of people like vanilla.
Yeah, it's a popular flavor.
It's a good flavor.
There are so many local references you can make to sort of anchor the club in the community and make it identifiable. Yeah. And I think they kind of missed the boat with that.
Look, I don't like it either. You hear it and I'm like, eh. But then I started thinking, I'm like, I'm not the person that they're appealing to. They're appealing to the rank and file Atlanta sports fan. And for them, United probably has only positive connotations. I'm sure they did a ton of focus groups with this one. But if you're just some guy who likes the Falcons and the Braves and you're like, oh, soccer, and you're United, maybe you connect with Man United. That's my hopeful explanation.
I'm
sure they'll be great. I just don't personally. It doesn't appeal to me.
I don't understand why if you're going to do it, you go with United and FC. You think you can just go with one and it fills the point. But moving on from that, we have a couple MLS Live accounts that we did have
to
give
we
out.
Do. Hey, and you know, some people tweeted at us and said, it's not half price, you idiots. Well, it was Wednesday that it started to be half price. So it is now $37.99.
Which we probably should
have. They are still idiots, though.
Yeah, we should have figured that one out.
Confirm that. Mm-hmm.
So Jimmy Garcia, who we see as the inventor of the term Farby,
He will forever be known as the inventor of Farby.
And Daniel Farias, who sent us about his graduation soccer tour, who we wanted to give him a gift. So he's they're both going to be receiving them. And then Alex in Syracuse, Alex Moses, will. He sent us his story. He's a huge LD fan, more than being MLS or anything else. He was a Landon Donovan fan. He went to go see him play against the Red Bulls with the Galaxy at MetLife for his birthday. His dad got tickets. They drove the 5, 6, 7 hours it is down, and he did not play. So then they drove in 2011 to Foxborough to see him play against Spain before the Gold Cup. That was a 7-hour drive, and Landon Donovan gets sick, stayed back at the hotel, and he did not play. So
cruel, cruel turn of fate.
Alex, I hope this makes it feel a little bit better as we're going to be giving you an MLS Live account.
Yeah, yeah, you can watch not Landon Donovan play.
Yeah, you could also go back in the archives and watch a few of those.
That's true.
Yeah,
good point, good point. Look at you. That's a good one.
Maybe that 6-1 win over, was it Colorado last year, if you want a good one.
Tough one. Get your Landon Donovan fix. There is a history of L.A. slapping people, isn't there? You got anything else? Is that it? I think we're running out of time here.
We got a lot of Dempsey and Yedlin stuff, which we'll get more into next time when we have a little bit more time. But we talked about loans for Yedlin. We got some people saying Southampton sounds great. They say Nathaniel Klein's moving along, and that team likes to play open, maybe allow him to attack
but Southampton, up the wings a little. You think Southampton's going to get somebody that they can invest in and then sell off in the future.
Yeah, that's kind of their MO. So,
yeah. Well, good idea nonetheless. Great show. Had fun. Matt, thank you for joining us. Dave, as always, enjoy sitting next to you and you correcting me on things. It's always a good time. Thanks to our guests as well.
I didn't know that was my total title, but
it is.
Yeah.
Garth Lagerway, the GM of the Sounders. Big thanks to him. And thank you to Emma Hayes. She continues to hold our hand and make sure we know all the ins and outs of the Women's World Cup. Until next time, we'll see you around.